Future-Proof Extra from News Talk.
Okay, so it is no big secret that in the animal kingdom, big, bold colours attract attention. This can be either to attract a mate or even blend into one's surroundings. It could also signify that an animal is dangerous, even poisonous. But how did this first trait emerge, and are there only certain species that do it? Well, Dr. Frank Reint is Associate Professor and Dean's Chair in the Department of Biological Sciences at National University of Singapore. Welcome to the program. Frank, this is probably the first time that we've had someone from Singapore on the program, I think.
Oh, I'm so happy to be the first one on your program from Singapore. That's a great honor. Thanks.
Chin chin. Okay, so this area of colors in animals, this is fascinating to me. So can you give me a list of reasons beyond what I've said, a bit more detail maybe, about why colors exist in such diversity and vibrancy in the animal kingdom?
Well, I think colors are one of the great ways for animals to signal. They're a great mechanism for sexual selection, for example. Optics is obviously one of the primary modes by which animals communicate. Of course, in mammals, there's a lot of pheromones involved as well, smelling your mate. In birds, there's a lot of sounds involved, the bioacoustic realm with the different vocalizations that might attract mates or keep off the neighbor in the other territory. But the way that an animal looks, certainly one of the primary ways in which it can communicate and signal things to its environment.
You'd think that the brighter the color, the healthier the animal, the more attractive the mate. But that would eventually, through evolution, lead to just neon animals everywhere, right? And that's not the case. Why do we have some animals that are dark, dull, and I suppose from a color point of view, being colorist, quite uninteresting?
That's a very good point. And I agree with you that it would be quite a fallacy to say that, oh, in every animal, we would expect to see brighter individuals prevailing over duller individuals. In some species, that is true, especially those in which sexual selection is driving them towards becoming ever brighter, ever more ornamental, such as famous Zahavi's handicap, the handicap of the male peacock, which carries around its huge train of feathers that makes it not very fit to survive in an environment that has tigers and other predators in it. But they do it all for attracting the females. But then in other animals, that just doesn't fit their lifestyle. They have an ecological niche that requires them to be camouflaged. They cannot look very bright in order to be seen by a predator. So it's not the sort of thing that fits every lifestyle, I would say.
You mentioned birds, and I know birds is your particular interest, and we see such gorgeous colors and such vibrancy in not just the peacock, of course, but many different birds. Ones I've seen, like toucans and birds of paradise, absolutely gorgeous animals. And of course, it makes sense that this might attract the eye, but also, as I mentioned in the intro, these colors are also used to sometimes warn off predators, and there are different ways of doing that. Can you give us some of the ways that colors actually tell predators, I'm not good to eat?
That's a very good point. So the vast majority of birds that are extremely bright are trying to attract mates. I mean, that is not contentious at all. But there are a bunch of examples in the bird kingdom as well, and then in many other animal kingdoms likewise, where the bright colors are actually meant to be aposematic. This aposematic type of coloration indicates to potential predators, don't catch me, don't eat me, you'll regret it.
What does aposematic mean?
That means a warning color in the animal kingdom.
Oh, so this is something that's aposematic. Aposematic means warning.
Aposematic. That's okay. Right. And that is something that some animal systems or some animal groups have evolved because it's a lot less costly for both sides, for the predatorial side, but also for the side of the animal that's likely to be eaten. For a predator to go around and each time try a particular insect. And in some cases, the insect is yummy. In other cases, the insect is really bitter and has poison in it. It's going to be much better for the predator to know to tell them apart. It's also going to be much better for the poisonous insect to tell the, to signal to the predator, look, I'm one of the ones that you're going to regret eating. And that is a system that has evolved in some of these ecological food webs in order to make the whole transactions much more easy.
Before we go into this area, because this is the, I suppose the subject of our talk, do we see colorations in birds that are that warn off predators in different ways, not to do with toxicity, but perhaps to make them look like other animals or to make them look like something dangerous?
Well, that is something that exists in birds. For example, there's a lot of size mimicry in predators, where a predator will mimic the plumage pattern of a much larger eagle species, for example, even though it's not nearly as large, not nearly as powerful and heavy, just to keep other predators away from its nest. So that is a pattern that has been observed in a bunch of accipiter sparrowhawks and goshawks, also in some honey buzzards that mimic the plumages of much larger and more powerful hawk eagles. And that tells other predators that are around, oh, I'm not going to get anywhere near the place where this bird is sitting or perching on the top of the tree, because it could be deadly for me. So that is a way of telling other animals, get out of my way. Yeah.
So tell me about this toxic aposematic coloring. How does it come about? And are there birds that are actually poisonous?
So aposematic coloration is something that has widely been known from butterflies, predominantly in the animal realm.
Yeah.
There are lots of butterfly species that are that have poisonous substances in them, so they're going to be bitter to predators. They're not going to taste good. And these butterflies have then adopted aposematic colorations. These are particular color patterns, often involving orange and red type colors, that will signal to potential predators, keep off. Now in birds, this is a very rare phenomenon, but there's actually one group of birds in which aposematic coloration combined with toxicity is known. And these are the pitohuis. Pitohuis, so P-I-T-O-H-U-I. The pitohuis are a genus of birds from Papua New Guinea, from the rainforests of Papua New Guinea. You have to imagine them as a mid-sized blackbird-sized bird. They are just about the same shape of a blackbird as well, maybe a bit larger, a bit heavier, have the same sort of bill shape, but they have a bright black and orange coloration. So some parts of their body, like the mantle and the head and the underparts, are orange, and then the wing coverts are all blackish. And this black and orange coloration indicates to potential predators, now you better not eat me. And in fact, it's been found that these pitohuis have batrachotoxins embedded within their feathers, within their skin. Batrachotoxins are mildly venomous. If you eat too much of that, you're going to experience paralysis throughout the body. Oh. So this is definitely not going to be a pleasant experience for a predator eating one of those pitohuis. It's going to taste very bad, and it's going to leave a very bad reaction in the body. And so these pitohuis have actually taken advantage of this coloration, the bright orange and black coloration, in order to signal to predators, you better not eat me. If they had just kept to maybe some sort of ancestral, more conventional coloration that's more widely prevalent, some duller coloration within the same family of birds, they belong to the Whistler family, the predator might not be able to tell the many different species apart from each other, and every time would commit the same mistake again and again and eat one of those toxic ones. So the predator also needs to have a way of distinguishing them, so to speak.
I see. So it sort of evolved this distinct marking to say we're the poisonous ones.
Exactly. If it didn't have such a marking, it would carry around its toxicity in vain. It wouldn't be able to signal to the predator, hey, you better not eat me. The predator would try it out, but then it's too late for the lifetime of that individual pitohui. So the toxicity is only useful if it comes along with something else, with some aposematic coloration that indicates to the predators that this is not something you should eat.
Essentially a food label warning. With these birds, you said it's quite rare. I'm trying to figure out why. Why would that be rare? Surely it's hugely useful to not only be toxic, but also for animals to know that you're toxic.
That is actually a very good question that I believe no one has an answer to. My interpretation would be that it's probably quite costly for birds to do such a thing. In order to be venomous to potential predators, in order to have batrachotoxins in your body, in your skin, in your feathers, you need to be resistant to those batrachotoxins themselves. In pitohuis, we know they have a certain gene that it's actually called the BTX gene that conveys batrachotoxin resistance to them. But that is something that needs to evolve first. And that is something that is probably very costly to upkeep as well. So batrachotoxins are extremely rare in birds. It's only found in pitohuis. Whereas in butterflies, for some reason, having venomous substances embedded in you and being venomous is something that's much more widespread. It might be much easier for them and for their metabolism to do something like that.
Now, if I were the cousin or perhaps even the neighbor of one of these poisonous pitohuis, wouldn't I be smart if I changed the color of my feathers to look like it, much like the false coral snakes mimic the coloring of the real coral snakes to get the protection of fear of poison to predators?
That is an excellent point. And what you just so aptly described is known as Batesian mimicry in biology. Batesian mimicry is the type of mimicry whereby an aposematic coloration has been adopted by a venomous animal, and then some other animal, some parasite, so to speak, a parasitic animal, converges on the same coloration to ride along with it, even though this animal does not itself invest any energy into toxicity. So basically, this is a freeloader. But Batesian mimicry comes with its own risks, because if you're a Batesian mimic, you will only be successful for as long as you are much rarer than the other species, the truly toxic species. If you're going to be commoner than the truly toxic species, this game will not work anymore, because the predators will predominantly eat members of your species, and they will not experience any adverse effects. And hence, they will not learn the signal, the cue of aposematic coloration. So it will only work in systems where there is a sufficient number of truly toxic animals that maintain the aposematic coloration, and just a small number of freeloaders riding along with it.
So does that happen with these pitohuis?
In the pitohuis, that actually does not happen. We know that that happens in a bunch of butterflies, in some of the coral snakes that you mentioned, that are some of the best examples in the animal realm for Batesian mimicry. What we have in the pitohuis is what's called Mullerian mimicry. It's another type of mimicry ring where a bunch of species converge on the same theme, because it's just too costly for each of these toxic species of pitohui to have its own aposematic color or pattern. Just imagine a world in which one toxic species says, okay, I'm going to be all yellow, and the predator is going to learn that they shouldn't eat yellow. The other toxic species then converges on another pattern, let's say pink or blue. A predator is not going to be able to learn all these colors as efficiently. So in Mullerian mimicry, you have a mimicry ring of various species, multiple species that converge on one color scheme. They basically share the same color scheme that's going to indicate to the predators that these are toxic animals, don't eat them. But all of them are truly toxic. None of them are freeloaders. They all have their own share in the toxicity.
Wow. So all of these animals in an ecosystem find each other because of the shared toxicity, and then evolve to have the same coloration, like a high-vis vest?
I think the way that we have to imagine is that one of them would have been the avant-garde. One of these species would have been the first one to invent the aposematic coloration. Another species, however, might also independently invent toxicity or have toxic properties, and then find that evolutionarily, those that start to look a little bit more similar to that other toxic species are going to survive better, since the predators are going to recognize the aposematic signal. Whereas those that tend to look dissimilar from the aposematic signal tend to survive less well. And that's how natural selection works. It's going to be those that are going to strive towards that aposematic color pattern that are going to survive better over time. And hence, all of of them will slowly converge on one color pattern, so to speak.
So when you say one color pattern, you don't mean the exact same stripes or dots or insignia, so to speak. Do you mean the type of colors or a mix of colors, like a palette? Or what exactly do these animals share in this Müllerian mimicry?
That can be highly variable from animal to animal in butterflies and also in these pitahuis. In the pitahuis, for example, the two main toxic species share the same sort of orange, chestnut, fiercely red, combined with black. So they have black wing patches, black tails, some black portions of the head, but then the mantle, the underparts, the rump are oftentimes in bright reddish chestnut orange. But the hue of this orange is different between species, sometimes even between populations of the same species. So in one of the species, the so-called hooded pitahui, it's a lot more chestnut brownish. In the other one, it's a lot more fiery orange. In the so-called southern variable pitahui, it's a lot more orange and fiery looking. So it's not exactly the same. So we can still tell them apart. They're different species. They have different songs. So they're definitely not the same species. They wouldn't mate with each other, but they still share the same pattern. We know that because there are other members of the same genus that are not toxic. Toxicity has not been found in them, and they don't share that pattern. They become much drabber again.
When you talk about species, you're presumably talking typically about the same animal, though, right? We don't see this Müllerian mimicry outside of birds in that ecosystem. We don't see butterflies or insects picking up that coloration, right? Even if they have the same predator, that's probably a step too far.
And you're completely right. For example, a butterfly mimicry ring is usually confined within one genus. The most famous genus is Heliconius. This is a genus of dozens and dozens of species of butterfly from South America, Central America, and a fair number of them, I don't know the exact percentage, but a fair number of them are aposematic and truly toxic. Some of them are also Batesian mimics, so they are freeloaders, but most of them are Müllerian mimics. They are aposematic, but they're all within the same genus. You wouldn't have all of a sudden some other type of insect that rides along on that same scheme. I think that's fair to say.
It's probably a bit too much to ask of evolution, yeah. I think. I mean, it's impressive enough as it is, but that seems like a pretty serious jump. I'm always fascinated to hear how different animals develop different techniques or traits to survive in their little ecosystem. But I have a question for you regarding just survival. If I were to find myself lost and stranded in a tropical forest and I came across an unusual looking animal, is anything about the coloration going to tell me whether or not it's poisonous to eat? Is any color in the animal kingdom an absolute no-go?
Okay, that's an excellent question that I've found myself grappling with many times when I've been out in the rainforests of Papua New Guinea or various parts of Indonesia. I would think that many of the hunting-gathering people that I've come in contact with, many of the people that leave a very natural lifestyle out in the hinterland of the forests of these remote regions, they have a dose of skepticism or a healthy dose of respect of anything that looks bright orange or bright red. Oftentimes I think that is the archetypical aposematic color in the animal kingdom. That generally signals that you better not touch me. And that's not always the case. I mean, we know cherries, we know all the other delicious red fruits that we enjoy eating all the time. But generally, I think if you're going to be a toxic animal, more often than not, it's going to involve one of these bright orange, reddish colors.
Good top tip, if that ever happens to me. Although, if I make it outside County Dublin in the next year, I'll be happy. Brilliant speaking with you, Frank Wright from the University of Singapore. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.